This podcast is for educational purposes only. The opinions expressed in this podcast do not reflect the official policy or position of the Ted Stevens Center, the U.S. Department of War, or the U.S. government.
Okay, so Maria, I just want to get started here with a kind of a broad question here. And, you know, the war in Ukraine has had a dramatic effect on European security, global security for sure, but certainly European security. The war led Finland and Sweden to seek membership into NATO and assimilate their defense policies into the alliance. In most of the high north countries, the Nordic countries are in a process of rearmament or considering increasing defense spending. 1 year into Sweden's NATO membership now, I think we're about at that point. What have been some of the new opportunities you've seen for security collaboration, or what, maybe more broadly, what's been the Swedish mindset here over the last year or so, up to accession into NATO? Now that NATO accession has come and gone, we got a year behind us there. It's a different security environment. What's been some of the strategic thinking there in Stockholm and across the country?
Thank you very much for the question. It's a very broad question, though, and maybe I start with the culture change that I see from the Swedish perspective, where we, from being in peace for 200 years and being a neutral country, decided to apply and join the NATO alliance. And to be honest with you, I would say that actually that was our Finnish colleagues that took the first step and reached out. And we have a long history together, Finland, Norway, and Sweden. And when Finland decided to go, we followed, political-wise. But what also struck us was that the population in Sweden was very, very positive. And we have not seen any type of hesitations when it comes to rebuilding the total defense, supporting the other NATO countries, and go all in to be a good contributing NATO member. Another important part of this is, as I said, the three countries in the north, Sweden, Norway, and Finland, being NATO members, the three of us, we got a connectivity of the region, not only when it is crisis, but also to be able to fight together in wartime. And this area have a lot of challenges, as you also have in Alaska, with, you know, harshly populated areas, a lack of infrastructure, and waste distances between competences and support, and of course, a subarctic climate. Just having these factors, I think the three of us make us ourselves stronger to deter, to have an integrated deterrence also on the local and regional level among the civil population. The NATO membership for us, 1 year in NATO, I can just see a lot of positive outcomes from us, from a security and defense perspective.
I think one of the things that stand out for me sometimes when I think about the way that the Nordic nations approach security is this concept of the whole of society or to total defense. And maybe it's not something in the United States people are as familiar with. I was hoping you could share us a little bit about that, because it is a different way of thinking about how you defend the homeland. And I know you're familiar with this topic, so I hope maybe you could share a few kind of psychological approaches that the Swedes and really the Nordics take when it comes to security.
But in Sweden, we define it as the civil defense and the military defense, bringing them together and being able to fight in wartime, but also be prepared for crises like, you know, natural disasters, any type of hazards that can occur, and being prepared in all different sectors that are needed for surviving and securing our security, and in worst case, the wartime. So the wartime is the goal for total defense when it comes into power. That is what we need to survive and what we need to function as a state and to defend the world rule-based order, the democracy and the human rights in our country, and not at least to also support our neighbors in this regard. So from the Swedish side, looking at this, it's all from the very local level, from the local society to function, to be robust and resilient. And we have defined it into 10 sectors that should be the very start. It's like the financial sector, you have the energy sector, you have the civil protection, and so on and so forth. So, of course, medical preparedness and everything. So these are the structure that is the basis. And then on top of that, you have children, you know, the children, childcare, schooling. You also have migration, and you have type of issues that are cross-cutting through all these sectors that have, by definition today, not a sector on its own, but might develop throughout. We are learning from Ukraine, looking into lessons identified, how they have been resilient, what is the new war, and what do we need to be prepared for, what do we need to develop and innovate in this regard. So the total defense in general is the civil defense capability to support the military defense to function. And in a whole, you get the total defense.
So does joining NATO impact that all? And what I mean by that is for as you mentioned, 200 years, Sweden maintained more of a neutral position, responsible mostly for its own defense, although you did mention there was some, there's some elements of a unified security mindset there in the European high north, but still a neutral country. And then Sweden joins NATO and in some ways has to, you know, enter into the alliance. It offers so much. It's great to have Sweden as part of the alliance, but yet now it has to consider what it's offering to the alliance and in sort of the integrated construct. And there's the 2025 to 2030 defense resolution that I interpret as sort of building upon Sweden's defense posture. But through this approach, this total defense approach, and now being part of NATO, does this new defense resolution, you know, build upon Sweden's defense position? Does it shift the mentality a little bit?
Maybe you could share a little bit about that.
Yes, absolutely is the short answer, but I will try to give you a little broader picture of that. Our defense policy, you know, I would say for the general population, that is economic-wise, that we are increasing our defense spending and increasing the total defense in itself. That means that we are spending on both the civil side, but also on the development of arms and also support for other countries. And the NATO, being a NATO member, I think the biggest shift for us is also that we have to think out from the northern flank. Mm. We have to be more, you know, taking a bigger responsibility, for example, the Black Sea, Europe, Indo-Pacific, understand, you know, that we are a collective of countries that being allied and partners, and that means something that we also need to be prepared to support and join where we are needed. And that is a mental shift in itself. But otherwise, I think we are a nation, as you said, 200 years of peace. In one way, it hasn't done us good because we sometimes are a little bit too laid back. But on the other hand, now when we are, you know, on the road, so to speak, and understand that we have a role to play and we are also a nation in the Nordic region, I think that shift is very positive. But of course, the defense spending and the spending on the civil defense, that will also hurt.
Yeah, I think I just looking at some of the numbers that I have here, increasing defense expenditures reaching about 2.6% of GDP by 2028, standing up 4 new brigades, increasing conscription perhaps by about 25%. I mean, pretty substantial investment in defense there, and certainly applaud Sweden for taking those steps. I want to pull on something that you mentioned there about connecting various regions. And you know, from sitting here in the United States, we look at Europe and you see the high north nations of Europe, and you look at the Arctic nations, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark. And, you know, we see Arctic countries. But of course, you zoom in a little bit more and perhaps, the Swedes would appreciate this. It's also a Baltic country. But you even just mentioned the Black Sea and how all these regions are connected, the Arctic, the Baltic, and even the Black Sea. Can you share a little bit more on how you see that? Because I think sometimes it can be kind of microscopic in the, well, those are Arctic countries and they only think Arctic. And then, okay, maybe they think a little bit about the Baltic. But you're even talking about the Black Sea, which there's no geographic border between Sweden and the Black Sea. But of course, if we're talking about security in the context of the war in Ukraine, the Black Sea's a critical component of that conflict. And, you know, Sweden bringing some of its maritime capabilities and other capabilities to the NATO alliance, it's to me, it's comforting to hear you talk about other regions outside of the geographic area that Sweden exists within. So maybe you could share a little bit on that.
Absolutely. And looking into the Black Sea region, why does that matter to us? Well, I would say that it's a great importance for us to zoom out and then zoom in again. And zooming out and looking at the Black Sea region, understanding that the Russian border does start from the very Arctic in the high north of Scandinavia and all the way down to the Mediterranean, and understand the pattern, the things that we have in common that we can read out from their experiences can also teach us how to act in the Nordics and in the Baltic Sea region. And tensions or activities, if that is like hybrid activities that occurs in the Black Sea region, that might be the same pattern, and that might be something that we can support, learn from each other, and also defend and share experience in this regard. Of course, there are two completely different environments, but I think we have a lot in common, and that is important. And not at least, I would say that the Nordic part is, of course, democratic-wise, a strong part of the world. We are stable, we are democratic, we are wealthy. The Black Sea region has younger democracies, another history, but at the same time, we are all Europeans, and we should definitely put attention to each other and try to support where we can. So I think that is one of the important things to understand. Another thing is looking at the maritime domain as such. I think we can learn quite a bit from the Russian behavior in the Black Sea, and see also what also occurs in the Baltic Sea region. But at the same time, zooming out again, looking up at the Arctic and how the Arctic also connects with the Indo-Pacific, and see the patterns there. So I would say same agitator, we have Russia, we have the same border, Black Sea, Baltic Sea, but we also have to learn to zoom out and look at even other regions. I think the gain is zooming out and zooming in and see what can we take of the best parts where we can build a stronger defense and make a more secure and resilient society, and what are the lessons identified that we can share, and what can we also bring it when it comes to psychological defense and psychological domain, so to speak, with the cognitive dominance. There, I think we have a lot to learn from Ukraine, and that we can share and support each other from, example, Moldova, from Romania, and other countries around, Bulgaria, and where we can have the same type of pattern also in the Baltic Sea states. I think the Nordic states might differ a little bit out from that we have had a longer period of time of stability. We have been more wealthy, but now we are pretty much in the same situation. So therefore, I think the connectivity is very important.
You've been involved with a series of European strategic deterrence games, and one of which I believe just occurred in Romania, if I'm not mistaken, or somewhere in the Black Sea region. And you know, at first glance, I was a bit surprised to see the Swedish Defense University involved in a deterrence game or workshop in the Black Sea region. But you just did a nice job pulling out some of the similarities between the two regions. At first glance, you look at the map, you see the Baltic Sea and the high north of Europe and say, okay, it's got its distinctive challenges, certainly some subsea cables that have been cut in the Baltic Sea. And, you know, I first thought, well, what is Swedish Defense University doing in Romania with the European deterrence game? But here you've just drawn out a lot of reasons why Sweden and SDU, for that matter, can bring experience and knowledge to the table in a workshop involving some other NATO members. So, speaking of which, I know that this is something that you're deeply involved with in your current role as the senior project director for the Strategic Implications and Innovations Center, and you're currently working on the Deterrence and Horizontal Escalation Project, if I'm not mistaken. What is this particular project? And maybe specifically, I think in some of the language describing it, it calls for a wider perspective of European security. I was hoping you could share a little bit of that, because I think that might fall in line a little bit with what you're sitting in the U.S. might be being asked right now of the Europeans to maybe try to take a bigger look at security or, you know, a more broad look at it. But let's perhaps hear it from you first.
Well, the strategic gaming is a tool, a matrix game that we have conducted and developed together with the National Defense University in Washington. And it started off actually as a project called Baltics Left of Bang, where we, together with the Baltic Sea countries, the US, together did a series of workshops and games in collaboration, broaden our perspectives out from the dime perspective, you know, the diplomatic information, military and information and economic perspective, civil and economic, sorry. This is actually what it's all about, bringing people together from different perspectives, from the military, from the civil, from the diplomatic, from the expert side, and have methodology that really pushes you out of the box and to think broader, think together, develop together, and also learn from each other, from the different perspectives, and also increased understanding of different types of language. Because when it comes to severe situations, it's very important that we do understand different perspectives, whether you are on the civil side or the military side. I think the platform for engagement, the platform for communication, is more important than ever. And that's why we continue this project, having gaming as a driver for both policy development, for research, and for further dialogue. So in between the games, we usually have workshops where we dig in with attachés, with experts, with researchers and diplomats on certain issues in certain areas. So we started off with the Baltics Left of Bang. We moved over to the Arctic and High North Deterrence Game. And the main purpose was to look at the Nordics to increase our awareness together with the US. What is deterrence? What does that mean for us? On the military side, maybe it's more, you know, clear, but on the civil side, how do we understand it? How do we understand it in the total defense concept? And what is at the time when we did the game, what does integrated deterrence means for the population? So that was the main focus on the second row. The third row, as you mentioned, is the horizontal escalation, where we tried to widen the scope and make a broad understanding of Russia's border to Europe from the very north to the Mediterranean. And what does that mean? What implications does that have? And bringing different scenarios on the table, and scenarios that might not be too far away, not too strange, or not too sort of, you know, unrealistic, and then tries to stretch us in that framework. And now thirdly, we are in the next row of European security and deterrence. And that is also very important to also get together to understand, where are we? Where are the European countries today? And what is European security? What is European deterrence when learning from the war in Ukraine? And we all support Ukraine in different manners with the resources we have. And at the same time, we also see that we are challenged in many different ways when it comes to hybrid threats, cyber, and other type of activities that occurs at this very stage. So in these times of uncertainty, and these times where also things are changing very rapidly, I think playing games, playing strategic games, and I would like to underline, it's not war games, it's strategic games where we bring people, decision makers, on the right level to contribute together and give us, thoughts, give us ideas, and not least, give us data to develop further and be stronger together. So I think that is the main purpose of the strategic gaming.
I'm curious what some of the findings might be. You mentioned that these strategic games will give you ideas, they'll give you data. You go through different scenarios. You mentioned three different scenarios that you've covered over the last year or so. What are you learning? And you know, how can you be confident that measures to increase deterrence don't accidentally lead to, say, escalation? Instead, what has there been some critical findings that you've seen thus far, or maybe differences between the various strategic games that you've played out in different regions, or perhaps, you know, what might be true one area, say in the Arctic, might not be true in another area, say the Black Sea or vice versa. And certainly, and there's a lot of questions thrown at you here, but some areas that threats are more traditional and obvious. There might be warships, say, on the Black Sea, whereas, say, in the Baltic Sea, there might be more hybrid activities such as cable cutting, and we have to determine whether it was a nefarious activity or an accidental one. So I think it'd be helpful maybe if you could share some of the things that have been learned, or maybe some of the things that were surprising that came out of some of this.
As we are focusing on the Arctic region, let me share a few takeaways from the High North Deterrence Game, which I think was very interesting, in particular, where we conducted a game in the Stockholm region. We brought, people from embassies, from the headquarters, politicians, and all people from different capitals coming together and did a strategic game, first in Stockholm. The takeaway from the Stockholm game, they were discussing deterrence by definition. They were discussing deterrence and integrated deterrence. What does that mean by definition in the different countries? More in a policy level. We did never get into, you know, the real stuff in that sense. We were more of a sort of political play. Then we moved up to the very high north on the regional level and played it the same game with the local representatives from the same type of audience. You know, you had the military, you had the municipality leaders, you had the regional government officers, and so on and so forth. The outcome was very clear. We do have integrated deterrence here, they said. You know, we could see that they could be more concrete on exactly what they do to deter. What does it mean to deter in this region? And that was a very big takeaway up from that game, where we could see how different regions actually taking on such a methodology in a very, very different way, that the outcomes actually was not even comparable. And the important thing is maybe not all the new things coming out, but a statue, like we could, out from the games, statue that the Arctic are moving from a low-tension area to a high-tension, more high-tension area, a geopolitical interesting area where great power competition starts to occur, and where we have a climate change that definitely will change the way on how we look at the globe, where the Arctic might be more in focus. It has been seen like something very far away. The mentality and also the sort of view out from the game, looking at the local population and regional population, they have been living there up in the north peacefully, no really interest in their life and situations. And to the game changer, where, you know, they're actually in the middle of the center of the development here, where a rapid climate change is really, really striking them up there. Traffic, military exercises, tensions between civilians out meeting out on the sea when it comes to trade and fishing and other stuff. So the games itself might not be a lot of new insights, but they at least can give us a sort of flavor and an indicator of things that we might know, we might didn't know exactly, but we get more data to dig deeper into and maybe also make research on. So yeah. I think that is very important, and it's very important also for decision makers to get the data out of the games, where they can actually contribute to strategies and out from the lessons identified, have deeper workshops where we can really fine-tune things. So that is a few reflections out what we can see from the games.
So if I'm pulling out a little bit from the scenario, the example you're given, it seems as if in some areas of Sweden in particular, there's a real visceral experience for people in real time seeing some of these changes play out. In Stockholm, it might be the city itself, the area around it might be kind of business as usual, unless you're involved in the strategic development or the policy of developing Arctic strategies or defense strategies. But in other areas, perhaps in the Baltic Sea or in the High North, people are experiencing this in real time. And you're able to collect data off of that, sometimes just to validate what you previously knew, which is helpful, but sometimes to validate what might not have existed in the past. That in some ways is fascinating unto itself. As we kind of get towards the end here, I know that there was supposed to be a strategic game played out next week with the National Defense University in Washington. I think last I checked, that might have been postponed. Regardless, I believe it'll happen at some point. Can you share us a little bit about what that one will be about, and perhaps what you might expect to, maybe not come out of it, but what you would hope to get out of it?
The game that was planned for next week was on European security and deterrence. We thought and we think having, usually we have a game in Europe, Stockholm, and one game in Washington, and we alternate that. And that is also to see, you know, what is your view? What is the Washington collective view on certain issues, on European security and deterrence, and then play out the deterrence game also in Europe and in Sweden, could give us a comparability of the different of the two games. We postponed. You have had an election, as you all know, and you have a new administration, and we were not sure whether there will be a lockdown or not. And we thought, due to all the development that is actually occurring now and the change that you are in, when the new administration is in place, when we know a little bit more, I think it would be a very good ground to share experiences, to be together and dig deeper into the European security arena. I think that will give us much more of interesting output and also of exchange of views from different perspectives, from the American side, but also from the European side. So in this regard, we invite European countries and we invite US colleagues, civil, military, diplomats and experts and researchers. So I do hope that we can, by these games, have them as a driver, as a tool to deepen our understandings, our perspectives from different angles and move forward in a more, you know, jointly coordinated way, and that the games itself can be a contributor to a more harmonized development between the civil and military understanding on security and defense issues.
Well, it seems these games have been helpful in the past, and the exchange of views going forward will certainly be helpful and informative to everybody's security and defense policies as we move into the future, whatever that might hold. Maria, thanks for taking the time to be with us today. We hope to see you sometime soon at a strategic gaming exercise or at a Ted Stevens Center event, whether it be here in Alaska, in Washington, in Stockholm, or anywhere else. There's plenty more we could get to, but I think we'll leave it at that for now, and we'll see you sometime on down the road.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.